for the last round interview of the week.
Welcome back to a bonus edition of the Last Round podcast. A guest that we haven't had in a while. He was actually in retirement as of May 2022 last year, but just recently revealed that he is in plans to come back into the ring. Just like many people, when they go into retirement, kind of get that itch to come back. And we're going to find out today if that's what happened with him. Former WBO super featherweight champion of the world, Jamel Herring, returns to the Last Round. Thank you for joining us again, Jamel.
Hey, it's always good speaking with you guys, man. Thank you for having me.
So, as I just mentioned, in May of 2022, you took the loss to Jermaine Ortiz. Mm-hmm. And then you tweeted, I'm going to read you an excerpt here. I appreciate everything. Thank you all. It's time to move on and enjoy more time with my family. I love this sport, but I owe it to my family to quit putting them through these moments. Thank you all, whether you were with me or against me. You made me who I am, but it's time. What changed as of today?
What changed? I spent enough time with the family. Everything's been great at home. Don't get me wrong. I'm enjoying commentating with Top Rank and, you know, Sky Sports and those guys over there. But as well, I think the commentating is actually what got me to really get that itch. Because if you think about it, you're sitting up in the ring for every fight, even the big fights now, and it's like you're just sitting there, just like feeling the energy behind you from the crowd. You're picking up on things in terms of learning what was going on in the ring and so on. And it was like, man, I think I miss being in there rather than sitting down here. I mean, I love sitting down here, but I really, really being in there is what got me to even be where I'm here sitting down here. So it was one of those things. And then honestly, I was basically just to get my feet wet and just, you know, just shake out and just the thrill again of fighting. But then, as you've seen, in just a completely different plan in terms of with the Cordina situation. But I'm pretty sure we'll get on that. We'll get on that soon, too. But it was just one of those things that just got the itch from just watching everything from the outside as a commentator.
So, Jamel, everyone that's had a girlfriend, everyone that's been married, you know, how did you break it to the wife? Because we always think we're in charge, but we're not in charge. So what did Jennifer say?
Jen, the boss, she's upstairs right now, so I'm gonna be trying to be quiet. But she kind of seen like, you know, I just missed it. She seen it. It was one of those things where like, no matter how hard, I'm not saying she was trying to, but like, no matter how hard I stay away from the gym or the ring, it's always that. You know, something that always wants to bring you back. And she understands. And don't get me wrong, she would still prefer me to be home, of course. But she's been warming up more and more in terms of to the idea of coming back. So I got to thank her for that.
Can you pinpoint, because you touched on, Jamel, that, you know, you've been, I guess, behind the microphone since throughout your retirement. And you're watching the action, the fight, and you were getting, you know, that's kind of what pointed you to kind of get back in the ring. Is there a specific moment since May of 2022, since you've been commentating up until recently, that you can pinpoint, say, you know what? That got me back into it. Any specific fight or event?
You know, it's crazy. Like, one of the fights that I wasn't even commentating, but I enjoyed watching, even from the crowd, was actually the Lomachenko-Haney. Haney-Lomachenko fight. That was the last fight I actually attended to. But, like, overall, I've been through so many fights now in terms of just being ringside that I can't really like pinpoint which one, but I think for sure Haney Lomachenko definitely was the straw that broke the camel's back, like that last, like, okay, you know what? I was out there enjoying it with the fans all this time. So I was sitting there speaking with the fans and the spectators and you know, speaking with everyone. And it was just one of those things like, man, I really missed these moments. So that was really it.
Did you talk to any active fighters or even other retired fighters about your decision?
Actually, it was two Hall of Famers that constantly kept, like, actually poking me to come back. And that's actually Andre Ward and Timothy Bradley, surprisingly. Like, because, you know, I work with them with the commentating. So every time I would go to a fighters meeting, Andre Ward is the first one. So what's it going to take for you to come back? And I would always say to him, well, you know, I'm just trying to learn more. He's like, nah, man, you need to, the division is wide open. You should really come back. I'm like, and it's been going on for like basically the whole year of Andre and Tim just constantly motivated me. At one point, as you guys seen, they just motivated me to get back in the gym just to work out, continue working out. Just stay sharp, Jamel. Just go back to the gym. And then it went from that to, oh, yeah, we see you back in the gym. What you got planned? And every time I would tell them I had nothing planned, they thought I was just like full of it. I'm like, no, at this point in time, I don't have anything planned. I haven't spoken with any promoter about anything or a fight plan. I'm just working out just to keep the weight off and just stay in shape. But over time, it was like, you know, they just kept, again, poking at. And I was like, you know what, maybe I should. But these two guys I respect. They're both Hall of Famers. They've seen it all, done it all. And they're really behind me about getting back in there. So I just kind of like looked. I just kind of then started taking my time to look around the room to see the boxing landscape and especially in the super featherweight division. And it was one of those things. So it was actually those two individuals I give credit to in terms of, you know, really getting me back in it.
And Jamel, when you retired, you had a few injuries to take care of as well.
Yep. I had to get basically two cortisone shots in my shoulder, because when I would train, ever since the Ito fight, but me being a Marine, I just brush things off, keep it moving. But like since the Ito fight, you know, it was hard for me to kind of like keep his arm up or like to really pump my jab, you know, because I'm a boxer, so I love everything's for me is behind the stick, everything's behind the jab. So, but it was like, when you can't use one of your favorite tools, you really start to feel handicapped after a while. And that's why I was like, you know, say what I said last year, because I thought my body was just through, but I needed just time off. Because I was actually going to, you know, people came to me about getting like treatment, you know, surgery from looking to make sure that was my rotator cuff. And it was just, but luckily I didn't have to go through any surgery or anything like that. And, you know, I went to the seeing the doctor over the last few months or so, making sure that I had, you know, mobilization in my arm and things of that nature. And when I started getting back into the gym and seeing that, okay, now I can finally work out again without my arm wearing on me, and to where a point I had to stop throwing it for a few rounds. I was like, okay, maybe I can get back into it. Because you guys seen that I've taken care of my body. It wasn't a thing like, you know, I took I put on 40 pounds in between camps. I mean, it's a year later and I'm still, I actually was like maybe like recently 13 pounds over the super featherweight, you know, limit. So if I want to make the weight, I could still get in the gym and just focus on just training rather than trying to have a fat camp and focus on just losing weight.
Jamel, I saw that you went over to the UFC PI as well for your shoulder. How was that experience? And is that something that you think you'd like to see in boxing?
You know, it's funny. I'm actually scheduled to go back now because I work with a doctor over here, Dr. Heather Linden. You know, she's been great. She always makes sure that she gives me like make sure that I get the proper physical therapy. And so with the comeback now, the plan is to train in Las Vegas close by the UFC, you know what I'm saying, PI facility as well, because, you know, they open their doors up to me. So if I can do what I can to prolong my career even further in terms of with age and how my body functions and things like that, why not get all the best tools and treatment that I possibly can to give myself a better chance and you know, possibly becoming a world champion again.
You have a coach in mind?
As of now, you know, like I actually was speaking with Brian Bowman McIntyre, you know, who trains with Terrence Crawford. But at this point, you know, because we mended that old relationship, so we've been on great terms. But I know right now he's you know, he's basically busy with Terrence. And if you think about it, like, you know, they had Terrence and Errol Spence, they have the rematch clause, so. You got to look at, like, he's probably going to be busy for the rest of the year because, depending on how the fight goes in a few weeks, if one, you know, activates the rematch clause, then he's going to have to, you know, focus his attention on there. So, you know, I've spoken with him. As of late, I also spoken with Kay Caroma, who's actually been doing a great job with fighters. You know, he's been in guys' corners such as Shakur Stevenson, and you see a lot of the Olympic athletes in the top ring roster that he works with. So those are just you know, names to put out there.
When do you think, Jamel, that do you have like a hard deadline when you want to find a coach?
September. But I need a deadline soon, because September is when I'm. I just spoke last night with my team, and late September, early October should be like the return. Hopefully back at home in New York for you know, a homecoming that I haven't had in so long, because you guys know I fought basically everywhere but home. So, but it was originally supposed to be early September, but again, since everything started picking up so much traction and attention, they want to make it a big deal. Because I was just honestly like, guys, I wasn't really caring about, you know, having a flashy comeback, and you know, I just wanted just to box. I didn't really care if I was the first card fighter tonight. You know, I'm a fighter. I wasn't looking for the spotlight. I was just going to just quietly coming back. I mean, obviously couldn't be quiet, but I was just, you know, I wasn't so focused on, I needed to be the center of attention. I just wanted to just come back and fight. But when everything started playing out in these last, like I said, three days or so, then they called me back and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We want to do it the right way. We want to make it special. So we're looking at late September, early October. So eventually I'm going to have to start training soon. And my nutritionist at Perfecting Athletes, Paulina, she's already on my case at like 3 a.m. Like, you need to book a ticket and get out here to Vegas. So you guys probably see me out there and training pretty soon.
Will it be with Top Rank?
No. And it's not, it's actually not like we fell off on bad terms, because again, they just called me today. Top Rank just called me today about working two cards in August. So it was nothing like that. It was just one of the things where I think I just needed, I wanted to just try a different approach. Honestly, you guys are the first ones I'm telling this to, but I've been speaking with guys like, I am working with Luda Bella right now. So Luda Bella is the one, you know, Lou being a guy from New York, a guy who I respected, you know, growing up in terms of what he did for boxing. And let's be honest, Lou still works closely with Top Rank. I mean, he just took George Kambosos over there, has still, you know, ties with Devin Haney, especially when Devin went to Top Rank as well. And you know, Lou is just that right touch where, okay, even if I can't get a fight over with a Top Rank card, we can go to a match room. We can go maybe to a PBC card. So I just wanted to give myself options, because I didn't want to feel like, you know, when you give a certain, let's be honest, sometimes you give a certain umbrella at times. They have great ties with one sanctioned body or two sanctioned bodies, but if you go. This, if you have multiple roles, you may go every. You could probably put yourself in a position to fight for any one of those belts out there instead of just, you know. Because let's be honest, I believe, Navarrete and Oscar Valdez are fighting soon, but there's no guarantee that I will be in line to face one of those guys. You know, there's already guys probably already in the works looking at the winner, so. Well, I wanted to be with a promoter, and I love Top Rank. Don't get me wrong. Top Rank's great. They gave me an opportunity to become a world champion. So it's not anything bad against Top Rank. It's just one of the things where, I have to be honest with myself. I don't have all the time in the world. You know what I mean? I'm not a 22-year-old kid who, like I said, you know, I could do a 5-year contract and I could get to a veteran. Like, no, it's one of the things where, like, if I'm going to come back, I want to do it, but I want to get back into the mix of things, but I want to do it to where there's a roadmap where, okay, we fight this fight and then we get to this fight and so on and so on. Or we can look at this champion over here, the WBA, or we can do this over here with the WBO. So that was one of those things for me. But again, like I said, I love Ty Raymond. They actually didn't want me to come back fighting, honestly. They heard about it. They did hear about it also. They didn't want me to come back fighting because they told me, like, you know, we love you, Jamel. You're part of the Top Rank family. You know, we just care about you. But I told them, I said, listen, you know, it's not one of those things where I'm trying to jump straight into the fire. Like, I want to take my time and I want to see how I feel on the first fight back. And then if my body doesn't feel right, then okay, I might just walk away. If I feel okay, there's something still there, then I'll just continue pushing forward.
I saw you said in the previous interview that Oscar Valdez would actually be someone that you'd like to fight.
I always wanted to fight Oscar Valdez. I mean, you guys are smart. Like, let's just look at the WBO. Let's look at the WBO. When the current champion, right, has a belt and they want to move up, do they not get the guaranteed mandatory shot? Mm-hmm. So when I was WBO champion at 130 and Oscar Valdez was champion at 126, at featherweight, I was thinking, okay, when he moves up, I'm going to get the opportunity. But, you know, his team, his manager, his man, I never forget, his manager came to me respectfully and said, listen, champ, we're going to go a different route. And that's when he fought Miguel Berchelt instead. So I always, you know, I always been pushing for that Valdez fight. Even when I beat Carl Frampton, I wanted to make that fight. But then again, I had obligations where I had to face Shakur Stevenson. So it seems like I've never gotten the opportunity to get that fight that I want. And that's another reason why I really don't want to stick around trying to, like, go to WBO approach. And, you know, I love the WBO. They've been great to me as well. But there's no – if I'm not the mandatory, Oscar Valdez, no saying that Oscar Valdez is going to fight me. You know, and that's just the truth of it. I mean, look what we see now, even with guys like Shakur Stevenson and Devin Haney. If you're not the mandatory, you got to play ball with the champion's terms. So, and there's no saying that the champion's even going to want to fight you. So if I can force my way into a world title opportunity, I will do that. If I can grab a belt and then come back around and circle back to try to fight Oscar Valdez for a unification, if he beats Navarrete, then so be it. But right now it's like, I don't have the time to wait for these guys to do what they got to do and see if they're going to get the opportunity.
What did Lennox Lewis call it? Boxing politics?
Yeah. So. It's still there. It's crazy. So you gotta sometimes, as you see, you gotta play with the politics. You gotta go, you know, make your own wave and just go your own route.
You know, who's your
due to all that politics, as Lennox Lewis said, did you prefer the amateurs or the pros?
Amateurs is fun. Amateurs is a great time because amateurs, I came across a lot of great people who I'm friends with now. Like, again, I fought Josh Taylor in the amateurs, and him and I became great friends after that fight. That was back in 2011, back in London. And then me and Josh always had a huge amount of respect for each other. I just called this fight against Teofimo, and we hugged it out, and we spoke like good friends again. And like, so the amateurs definitely gave me a lot of great relationships with a lot of great fighters. The pros, I like the glory because there's a lot more, like, in terms of, like, you know, like, in terms of legacy, like winning and becoming a world champion. But I definitely hate the politics of it, the politics of it, because in the amateurs, you get a bracket and you have to fight whoever's, you know, lines up with you. Simple as that. The pros, it takes a while. you gotta be more patient as a professional fighter, especially when you're fighting at a higher level. Because when you're a prospect, you can probably fight every month or so, you know. But when you're at the high level, you gotta strategize and pick the right fights, and then you gotta hope that, you know, you gotta try to build it, and then you gotta try to, you know, negotiate. And it's a lot, but it comes with the territory.
Jamel, who's your ideal opponent in your comeback? Because we talked about Valdez. We mentioned Cordina, which we'll dive into a little bit more. But, you know, like you said, Andre Ward kind of said the division is kind of wide open. But who yourself, selfishly, who do you want to face? Like, who do you want to have that fight with, that mega fight?
You know, it's great. I never really thought of it like that, because I got to tell you guys earlier when I was thinking about just coming back, I was just thinking about coming back just to fight. But now that we kind of, like, in that realm, let's be honest, in that realm now, especially with all the heat picking up from the comeback, right now, I would say that the highest bidder obviously is Joe Cordina. You know, anyone is willing to give me a world title shot. But again, I wouldn't have an issue. You know, fighting. You know, he's still my friend to this day. You know, say if Lamont Roach wins against Hector Garcia, or so I will, you know, or Hector Garcia wins, I will fight the winner over there as well. I'm pretty sure Lamont Roach would love to get his, you know, to get some get back for, because yeah, I'm the only one who actually beat him as a professional. Of course, there's still that niche that I will fight also either Valdez or Navarrete. So it's pretty much anyone out there that wants to give, you know, me the opportunity, which I'm willing to work for, because, you know, I'm not jumping straight. Like, again, Another thing I wanted to, like, I think, matter of fact, I'm going to tell you guys this too. As of like yesterday, day before yesterday, I got a call from Luda Bella when that whole thing with me and Joe started going back and forth friendly on Twitter. He called me up like, do you still want to do that tune-up or do you want to, you know, jump straight into it? And I was like, no. I still want to go through the plan because, you know, I don't feel right. I don't feel right as a fighter, you know, trying to jump in front of the line anyway, you know, or if anything, especially, you know, my last fight was a loss. Let's be honest. Like, I'm just an honest guy. Let me get back in the mix. Let me earn a win. Let me get a win out there. And then we can talk about, you know, maybe fighting another fight or going straight into the Cordina fight. But that's one of the things that, like I said, in the last few days, a lot has changed for me. So I'm in a position where we're like, okay, now I got a pretty much a timeline what I want to do in terms of on the comeback.
And you would go to Wales for the Cordina fight?
Oh yeah. Yeah, you know me, I'm going anywhere. I always told myself anyway that I made a promise to myself as a 2012 Olympian in London that I will come back as a professional to fight in the UK someday.
Jamal, just tell the listeners how is you actually know Joe Cordina?
I met Joe back in 2011. That's one of the things again from the amateurs when you meet a lot of great athletes and individuals. And it's funny because it was in Azerbaijan, 2011 AIBA World Championships, Azerbaijan, and we was in the UK team and the United States team. We were all in the same hotel, and as by chance, you know, fate may have it. The UK and the United States were all on the same floor. So we couldn't go anywhere. It was nowhere. So we used to like hang out and just communicate and speak respectfully with one another. And I came across Joe then. And since then, like I said, me and Joe are friends on Facebook and everything. Even so, it's always been a friendly banter. Again, I give respect to Joe, matter of fact, for even acknowledging that, you know, that I wanted to even take a fight with him. And you can see now he's pushing for it. So, I mean, common sense is if you got an opportunity for become a world champion again, which route would you take? And would you wait around for the guys who possibly didn't want nothing to do with you anyway when you were a champion and look now have more of an excuse not to fight you, or you take your chances and you to be great by giving, you know, and facing a friend.
Going back to the Lou DiBella deal that we talked about, Jamel, did you have any other prospective conversations with any other promoter before?
No. Honestly, no. Because again, I was actually still debating on. Like, I was trying to see maybe if Top Rank would call me back to do something. You know, that's where I was at. A good chunk of my career, well, my great years of my career. So it was always top rank at the end of the day. But Lou DiBella, he's just somebody that I personally know because again, on the management side, I have fighters that fight under his umbrella. So it was just an easy conversation. You know what I mean? It wasn't like one of those things where you had to go through everything. Like, oh, we don't know because you may have ties with Top Rank. It was none of, like I said, the politics. So it was one of those things where it was just an easy conversation and we spoke on it and he kind of picked my brain like, why do you want to come back, champ? You know, those things. We spoke on it and he's okay, so let me just give me some time, let me work on some things and I'll get back to you. And he got back to me and then he gave me like the options and the list. He said, listen, we can go the WBA route, we can go this route, we can go that route. And that's what I needed to hear. You know, I didn't want to hear that, oh, you have to fight this guy, or if you want to get a shot, you have to fight this. It was like, no, we're gonna control the ship. We're gonna, whatever makes you comfortable and whatever makes you happy, we'll go that route.
Then we talked about Andre Ward and Tim Bradley, how they were kind of over the last year or so, kind of motivating you, and especially Ward saying it's wide open, the division's wide open. You know, when are you gonna come back? Did they get a leak before you announced it, or did they find out like everybody else?
They probably found out like everybody else, honestly. Like I didn't say anything to listen. Like, truth be told, I wasn't going to tell him anything if I did because, sorry, my partner Christina Poncha, she's upset with me right now because she wants me to stay with her at the, you know, on the, you know, partner in the commentating side, and I'm still going to comment because, like I said, again, Top Rank just called me up today and they still giving me jobs to commentate, and I'm still going to do it. So that's tells you right there. There's no bad blood. I didn't burn any bridges. But yeah, it's just one of the things. Like I keep telling them, I'm a fighter at heart. Like, what do you expect me to do? Like, I still have my senses. I'm talking to you guys with no issue. I'm not slurring any words, anything like that. Of course, I'm still going to take it safely when I get back in here. But it's not like when those. I'm not one. Like I said, I'm not that type of fighter where I'm coming back because I'm looking for a paycheck. Because if I was looking for a paycheck, I could fight Joe in September now. I could fight Joe now. But I was like, no, I want to give myself a chance to actually go into this fight and win. I'm not coming just to make a payday and then I'm not doing that. I'm coming back as a real fighter and a real contender. And I want to fight in the possibly the biggest stage. And let's be honest, the UK fights, they're like spectacles. So I always wanted that. When I see my good friend Errol Spence fight Kell Brook over there, For the same sanction of body build, IBF, I wanted to do that. So if I had that opportunity to do that before it was all said and done, and I can say, listen, I fought not only at home in the United States, I fought in Dubai, I fought in the UK. I want to leave something where I can have a great story to tell, and share with my kids in the future.
Did you say to Andre Ward, when are you coming back?
Man, I always ask Dre, man. Dre, he gives me the complicated answer. But yeah, like I always get on him, like, oh, you coming to me about coming back? You need to get back in the ring. But yeah, man, Andre's Andre, man.
And Top Rank, like you mentioned, you still have commentating gigs lined up, so they're cool with everything.
Yeah, on the 22nd, I'll probably find out more. Honestly, I'll probably find out more when I see them in the next week or so because I got to commentate for one of their cards in Oklahoma. So I always pick their brains, though. And I know, and like, I'm always around them, so I understand. I know when something's on their mind, and they're straightforward. So I'll probably know a lot more when I see them again. But again, I haven't had any, nobody come out, text me, or gave me any calls saying, what am I doing, anything like that. And so it's been good.
What do you think Bob Arum or Todd DeBuff, like when you see them and talk to them next week, what are they going to tell you?
They're probably shocked. Bob is going to be the first one I'll speak to. I promise you. I'll get back to you guys when I speak to Bob. But they're probably going to be like, interested. But again, Lou has a great relationship with Top Rank. So there's nothing saying that I can't fight on a Top Rank card. It's just that, for me, it was more out of respect for other fighters also. I didn't want to come back, especially the younger fighters they have building up. I didn't want to come back in and step on anybody's toes, pretty much what I'm saying. Like, I didn't want to jump in the head of the line and things of that nature. I'll go find my own way. I don't want to go, ask or beg for favors or anything like that. I'll go find my own way.
Jamel, if you were lucky enough to be able to pick, would you go Joe Cardona, Hector Luis Garcia, Oshaki Foster, Emmanuel Navarrete? Which one stylistically do you think would be best for you?
I would say this, credit to my man Oshaki Foster. I think Oshaki Foster, at least for my style, is probably the most difficult because because if you look at the issues, don't get me wrong, as a fighter, you got to work on everything. But let's be real, when you look at the issues I had with a guy like Jermaine Ortiz, trying to find him in the ring, trying to find him. I'm usually the fighter where you got to try to find me. When I fought Ito, I boxed the whole time, And when I had the issues with Shakur Stevenson, like trying to find Shakur, that it kind of threw me off. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. If it pays well and there's opportunity at the WBC route, then yeah, of course. I mean, I'll fight Foster as well. But I think, like I say, he would be the last option, if I'm being honest. Be the last option. You don't hear fighters say that. It's not like a duck move. Because like I said, if he gave me an opportunity, it's a world title. I'm there. But like, you always want to fight styles that maybe look, that probably, benefit your style, or it's two styles that clash that make a great fight. And I think even with guys like Navarrete, he's going to come forward and he's going to bring it to you. Your guys like Valdez, he's going to bring it to you. Even Hector Garcia. Then again, like I said, a rematch, if Lamont Roach wins that fight, a rematch with him makes a great story, and it is an easy build. It's an easy build for that fight. But and then with Joe, he has the crowd. He can put people in the stadium. So those are the things I look at. I look at the things that's gonna be a longer lasting appeal. People look back on that fight. Oh yeah, I remember he fought over here and it was a big thing. So that's how I am.
And it, that would be a rematch, right? You fought in the amateurs.
I think Joe was actually. It's funny. I was actually in amateurs. I was actually a junior welterweight. I was a junior welterweight in the amateurs. I think Joe was a featherweight at the time and then coming up in the amateurs. Because I remember when Josh Taylor came, when he got to the Olympic team, he was a lightweight. He was at 132 pounds in the amateurs. And then the thing was, I keep forgetting his last name. He's a good guy. He's a good friend too. Tom was their junior welterweight. So yeah, Joe was. We never met in the ring, but we always came across each other in the tournaments and when I seen him around.
Thomas Stalker.
Yeah.
He was the captain.
Yeah, he was the captain. Yeah, he was the captain. I was the captain. Yeah.
Jamel, so do we have a specific date in September, or is it up in the air right now?
Oh, like I said again, when Joe made it clear that he would fight me, it seemed like everyone on my end had to hit the reset button because it was supposed to be like early mid September. Now it was coming to looking at like, okay, because they want to make it a build. Think about it as a promoter, you want to build it up now to fight a Joe Cardona. So you're going to put as much of attention on it. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to like a DAZN or something like that. You know what I mean? So, and gets more media attention in terms of because I think they want to match the timeline now when Joe Cardona fights at the end of September. I think he fights September 30th, if I believe it is. So they want to basically match the timeline up the same road and, you know, the road to that fight. So I get it in a promotional standpoint. So things have changed. There's still no concrete date. They told me to give them to next Monday for something solid more. But again, you guys know when I hear the news, you guys will know.
But the goal is at least as of today, sometime in September, right?
September, no later than early October.
And then we touched on Terrence Crawford earlier and BOMAC and all that. Obviously Crawford was your stablemate for a while. You guys were in the same gym, trained by the same trainer. He's got a big fight, biggest of his life, coming up in about 2 weeks against Errol Spence Jr. They're calling it a generational fight, maybe fight of the decade between two of the best fighters in the world today. Break that fight down for us. What do you think?
That's tough because again, I spent a lot of years around Errol Spence as well. We were both Olympic teammates. Errol's actually Errol Spence has probably been like one of my biggest supporters. In boxing, like Errol Spence believed in me when most thought I couldn't become a U.S. Olympian. You know, Errol Spence was there pushing me. He was there for me as a pro, even when I took my first loss to Shapovalov. He was there, you know, uplifting me and keeping me up. So, and he's always been around. Even if you don't see it publicly, well, he reaches out to me behind the scenes all the time. And again, Bud, he's another one that's near and dear to me. But going to the fight itself, it's always a hard one to choose because these guys, like you just pointed out, it's a generational fight because these guys are just so good in their own ways. They're completely different, but what they do it damn good. And it's like, you know, a guy like Errol Spence, you know, he's a big guy. He's going to be a big guy. He's already made it known after this, whatever you may want to call it, trilogy, two fights, whatever, with Bud, he wants to move up. So, you know, he has that size. He's a big puncher. But on the other side, Terrence Crawford is a big puncher as well. I mean, Terrence Crawford, despite what you may say about his resume, you know, there are tomato cans out there who have granite chins that you can't put down. So I always say that to say this, like, you know, this guy stopped everyone he's faced as a welterweight. So you got to take it. And then he can fight orthodox or southpaw. And me being in with him from sparring and things, Bud has power in both hands. I spar with Errol. Errol is strong. Errol can wear you down, you know, mentally. So there's a lot that goes into that fight. And there's times I go back and forth on who has the advantage and who's going to be the better fighter in that fight. If you look at the odds, man, it's a pretty much even fight.
What do you think out of both of them, even though they're all around good fighters, great fighters in different aspects of their game? But which quality for each fighter stands out above the rest for each of them?
I think it's crazy. They both have strong mindsets over a lot of fighters. I mean, you got to think about it. Errol Spence has been through hell and back. Let's be honest. And then when he came back after the accident, everyone, you know, everyone, including myself, we were all thinking that, you know, just take a soft touch chance. You know, we don't know how bad these injuries were from the accident. What does he do? He goes straight into the fire. He jumps straight back into it, and then he wins. He's going at the champion. And that takes a strong mindset, because you think about it, we live in a generation now where champions with one belt or so, they don't have to fight the other champions or so. They will do everything to steer away from that typical opponent. But Errol Spence, he took care of business on, as he said, on his side of the street, and then he was man enough, you know what I'm saying, to say call out Errol Spence. I mean, Terrence Crawford after he beat Ugas. But then you got a guy like, you know, Terrence Crawford, same thing. His mental mindset is just as strong, because this is a guy who came from nothing. You know, he's been shot, left for dead pretty much. He wasn't an Olympian, so he had to take the long way up to becoming a champion. He did what he did at lightweight division. He cleared out the junior welterweight division. He's been pressing and pushing for this fight for years. You know, when he came up to the division, his main set goal was to fight Errol Spence Jr. from the rip. And like I've seen Bud work in the gym in terms of like, I can watch this guy fight last weekend, and then I'll be still doing my training camp. And he's right back in there Monday. He's back in there Monday, he's doing something. So he's always a workaholic. That's what I can say about Bud. He's a workaholic. If anything, if you could say Errol has a very strong mindset, a guy like Terrence Crawford is a workaholic. Takes care of his body. I've never seen him even look at a drink, doesn't do anything. He just spends time with the family and trains.
When we know it's probably gonna be difficult for you to make an actual prediction on who wins,
but yeah,
let me ask you this. I'm giving you an out. Ask you this. Regardless of who wins or loses, does the fight go 12 rounds?
That's the real question. That's the real question right there. I don't know if it goes 12 rounds. Either one of them. I don't know if it goes. That's I will say. I don't think that fight sees the final bell. I think that it's going to be a dog fight so much that they're going to give until they force the other one just to tap out pretty much. That's how I look at it. I don't think, and I hope it ends like that, because let's be honest, if it's a close fight, and you know, depending what side you're on in terms of the fans, somebody's gonna scream robbery. We see that too often in boxing. But if it's a close fight and it's fan favorite fighters in there, it's gonna be called a robbery, and nobody wants to go through that. It ruins a good fight when you put a nasty touch like that, robbery all the time on these fights. We forget how great the fight was, that everyone's now looking at. The judges were screwed up in the fight. So, no, if anything, I hope, you know, I don't want anybody to get, like, seriously injured. Hurt or anything. Like, those are still my bros and everything. But, like, I'd rather have it end, you know what I'm saying, by a stoppage or something than going to the decision if it's a close fight, because somebody's going to scream robbery at the end of the day.
Like, look at Canelo Triple G. Look at the scorecards on that first one.
Yeah, first, and you see how that one turned out. It did force the second fight again, but people still – till this day, when they look at the trilogy, well, in reality, Golovkin really won the first fight. So they're going to still go talk about it for years to come anyway, if it's a close fight and they feel like their fighter got robbed.
Yeah.
Jamel Spence, Errol Spence has said, and I think he just said it as recently as this, the first episode of the All Access on Showtime, has said that his plan is to likely move up to 154.
Yeah.
After... Let's just say he wins. Does he move up, and will the rematch possibly? Would Crawford move up to 154 to have that rematch?
That's a good point. That's a good question. I never thought of it like that. I know the rematch clause probably pertains to them at welterweight, but it could be. I mean, there's always a thing case where you know they have a mutual agreement on it. They do the rematch at a higher weight class, so. So I can see that. That's a good point. I never thought of it like that, but I can see that happening too. I can see that, but I guarantee. If we're talking business first, if the fight generates what we think it may do, oh, you best believe those guys could come back for another round of that. Come on, and say if it even splits 1-1, Well, it's not to say the third fight could be at a higher weight, you know, at a higher weight class for the trilogy.
And then another fight that's coming up, I believe, in the end of September, Canelo Charlo kind of came out of left field. It came out of left field because it's not the middleweight Charlo, which I think is Jermall. It's Jermell Charlo who holds all the 154 titles. Can you give us your reaction when you heard it was the 154 brother at 154 pounds moving up?
I mean, I was surprised, but I shouldn't say I was too shocked, because if you look at it, I mean, they already pulled up reels and footage that he's been calling him a Charlo forever. He even said if he has to move up to fight Charlo, Canelo, he would do it. You know, he would do it. And it's one of those things, okay, you know, now he prove it, and he's proven it. So, but I still think he has a good chance because of his boxing IQ. You know, Jermell is a really good boxer. Yes, we know Canelo is dangerous for anyone on any night, but, you know, I still give Jermell Charlo a shot, because someone trying to say that Canelo could be on the decline at times from his own last few fights. We don't know, but we don't want to use that as any excuses. But you still got to take consideration and take notice of those things at times as well.
We also wanted to get your take on a recent issue or, you know, situation with Virgil Ortiz. He was supposed to fight this past weekend in Texas on a Golden Boy card against Stanionis for a WBA title. And this is the third time consecutive fight that he's had to pull out because of medical issues. You being a professional fighter, having gone through weight cuts and all that, kind of give us your take on that whole situation, because there's a lot of people commentating and putting their opinions saying, hey, you know, third time this happened, like, why didn't you stop him from staying at that weight after maybe the second time?
Right. And I get it. Cause let's be honest, you guys, like, again, follow my career. I thought I would never see super featherweight. I thought I was too big. But with that being said, I knew I couldn't do it by myself. So I had to go do the smart thing by getting a nutritionist. And that's one thing I've been stressing with Virgil for the longest. Like, man, just if you want to stay at this weight class and you know you're having issues doing it, and don't get me wrong, Virgil's a good friend of mine, and I'm not criticizing him. I'm not trying to, you know, bash him. He's already been through enough. But go get a nutritionist, or just move up, Don't. It's not worth your health. Any amount of money is not where you can find success elsewhere. But just take care of your health. If you keep breaking your body down now the way he's been doing, you're not going to have much of a career to fall back on in the future.
You don't have to say, but how much does something like that cost for a pro fighter to hire, like, a nutritionist for a camp?
It all depends. I can answer that. It all depends. Like, for me, it can be pricey because, again, like I said, I'm a big guy, I'm a super featherweight, so I need my nutritionist every step of the way. You know, I need her to micromanage, make sure that I'm doing everything correctly. Some fighters, like my friend Sinisa Estrada, we use the same nutritionist, but she may only use her for 2 weeks. I may use the nutritionist for 5 weeks or so. You know, 5 weeks or so, when I'm time for me to say, okay, now it's time for me to monitor what I'm eating. I need my nutritionist here. Let's do it the right way. But somebody like Sinisa Estrada or other fighters, that they may get the weight down, but just may have that little push to get those extra pounds off, then they may bring in a nutritionist for that maybe fight week or a few weeks. But for guys like me, I'm not saying I have weight issues, but if I want to get down to the weight and be safely and be strong at the same time, I'm going to get the nutritionist for as long as I feel like I need the nutrition, as long as I need them.
And Jermell,
that could be costly though. But it's the price you pay for. You're investing in yourself. You're investing in your career. Would I rather invest and make something, or go out there and try to do it and not make it to the fight and make nothing?
And is that like the nutritionist coming to your house, there with you for a few weeks,
or I can show you guys even now, like, my nutritionist just reached out to me about they want to get an Airbnb, and, you know what I'm saying, get an Airbnb for camp, and, you know, she's on it. She's great. Paulina is great. She's like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We can get an Airbnb and we can do this and yada, yada. And so like, cause she, my nutritionist for the most part, they live with me and they just basically make sure not only that I'm good in terms of eating wise, but they make sure that I have the proper, the nutritional value with maybe supplements and things of that nature. You know, making sure that I'm taking everything that's legal, you know, and not putting anything in. Even if I say like, if I bring something to them, even if it's like a drink, I'm making sure, hey, can you read this and make sure there's nothing in here that violates Vado or anybody? So that, yeah, they do a lot. They make sure that my body is together for the go to long haul. That's why I'm going back to Vegas for the USC facility, because, you know, we have friends there that's going to make sure that I get the proper treatment for recovery and things of that nature.
Don't eat too many eggs like Conor Benn.
Oh, no. she makes me omelets, but there's only but maybe a 2 eggs at the most.
Jamel, who are, you know, since you've been on the commentating game on for the last little over a year now since your retirement before announcing your comeback, you obviously been able to watch from the outside looking in and kind of study, you know, the current landscape of boxing. Who are some of maybe your up and coming prospects that you're on the lookout for?
Oh man, like I said, Tiger Johnson is one of them. Bruce Carrington, Stephen Noon. He's another guy he's actually a Scottish fighter who's going to turn pro soon. He's looking to turn pro around October. So I mean, the list goes on. Duke Reagan. It's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of phenomenal talent. And that being said, though, I think that's the reason why I didn't go back to top rank approach, because I wanted them just to, you know, let them do their thing and focus on the newer talent coming up. So that's what I meant by like not stepping on anybody's toes. But I mean, I got to really dig through, because there's so many fighters that I like to see and that's coming up. But yeah, there's a lot of, not even just in the United States. I'm looking at guys overseas and I mentioned Stephen Noon, like he's a Scottish fighter, but the kid is good. The kid is, you know, he's a common. He's done his thing over there. He's looking to turn pro. So yeah, I'm really looking at the new wave of talent, and then we just seen Floyd step up on the Golden Boy card over there. So you got to look at guys like that. I look at everybody around the board. Even female fighters. Makaya Krebs, who I manage, she's coming up and she should be fighting for a world title soon. So yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of good, great talent coming up in the future of boxing. Looks good as long as these fighters the best want to fight each other. The future looks great.
Tell me that we're gonna get Sinisa Malin Esparza too.
Oh yeah, Sinisa definitely wants that fight again. I know Marlon. She's my old teammate. I know she's willing to do that again. But it's one of those things where the promotions of boxers have to really come together and make that fight, because now they're on two sides of different streets now here with Golden Boy and Top Rank. But yeah, I hope they do it again, and I hope they do it again at 3 minutes, like the last fight, like the first fight. It was entertaining. You got to see the skill set with the 3 minute rounds. Yep.
There's one other fight that just came to my mind. I don't know why we forgot to ask you about it. The monster, Hinaway, against
Fulton. Stephen Fulton. Yeah, Stephen, that's a good one also. That's a hell of a matchup. You can't put anything past the monster, of course, because he's called the monster for a reason. But then again, you know, Fulton is a really crafty boxer and is a respectful right. And if you think about it, I don't think Hinaway, I got to check again. Like I said, I got to do my own homework as a commentator, but I don't think he's fought anyone with that type of skill set, you know, like a mover, a boxer. Let's be honest. We know how us African American fighters are, you know, more known as being a boxer and a mover and not much of a a banger. So I don't think it's probably been a while since we've seen in a way with a style like that. So that's what makes the matchup intriguing.
Jamel, one thing I wanted to ask you about is that amazing nightclub, bar, movie studio that you have on your IG.
Oh yeah.
That came from I had to do something at a retirement. But that's usually for me. That's usually for like the guests when they come over. Like, because you, like I said again,
I'm glad I didn't go to the bar, you know, this whole entire year. I've probably been a different type of person in front of you right now. But yeah, I just like that for like, cause I love having family over and I love having a great, cause you guys seem to throughout the year, I had a lot of family gatherings and that nature. So, but also, you know, I've been thinking about even going into doing a podcast. And I was like, you know, it's funny. I never thought of it. I actually got that idea. I think I seen Carl Frampton before me and Carl Frampton fought. I think he had like a similar thing in his own home with like the bar area in the back. And I was like, that's a really cool look. And I just want to do something similar to that. So yeah, thank you, Carl. I give you thanks for that also. I never told him that, but yeah, I seen him one day. He's playing the guitar. He's doing playing the guitar or whatever, but he had in the back, it was like a bar at his house. So it was a nice little setup. And I was thinking like, if I do a podcast or whatever, I'm going to have that as my setup in the background. But yeah, that's where that really came from.
It was the awesome white Corvette. Was that a retirement present to yourself?
That was my Shakur Stevens present. I think I earned that one after that fight. That was my, the Hellcat, that was the Ito, you know, becoming a world champion, thing. The Frampton fight, I did the smart thing by buying my home. The Shakur thing to not pay so much on my bruises and my cut eye after that night, I said, I'm going to get my Corvette. So that was my gift for me after that fight. I earned that. But again, shout out to Shakur Stevenson, man. We're good friends now, and you know, I wish that kid the best of luck and everything, man.
So speaking of that,
but now even if I fight Joe Cordina, I don't need any more toys. I don't need any more things like that. I think I just, you know, like again, I just sold one of my properties. So I probably just, you know, invest more and just, you know, invest it more to my kids, man. I'm not a needy man. That's why I was telling you guys when I was coming back, I wasn't coming back for, you know, money. I'm happy with my life now. I was just coming back because I had the itch. And again, like I said, I didn't fight Joe Cordina. I'm not fighting Joe in September because, again, it's not about money. I take the sport seriously. So if I'm going to come back, I'm gonna do it the right way.
Well, I wanted to touch on the Corvette one more time. What do you think about electric cars since they're really popular right now?
I mean, I just got my wife a Tesla recently, and it's convenient. It's useful, especially like locally. It's real convenient. Especially also when you get the whole charging up system, you know, at home. But I don't like the idea of too much muscle cars going the electric route. Like, I mean, I'm a big Dodge fan, and you guys see the new Charger coming out, and they got basically electronically raw to it. Like, I prefer the engine raw. So like if you're trying to get just an electric car just to maybe save money because gas prices are going up and things of that nature and so on, and it's a lot easier and convenient for you, cool. But sports cars, it's gonna have to grow in the world. And of course, things change over time. 20 years from now, we'll probably be so accustomed to electric. So, but it's gonna take time to grow on.
After the Joe Cordina fight, any chance of a classic car? Any classic muscle cars take your fancy?
I'm big on my old school 60s, you know, 68, 69, you know, the Mustang and the muscle cars of that era. So, yeah, but it's one of the things where, like, I gotta get permission first. Because she's like, you know, I'm not trying to fill my driveway with all these cars. So I gotta get, but for me, I'm just like, the glory with the Joe fight, to me, forget the payday and anything, it's that title. It's that title. You know, becoming a world champion is a great thing, but when you can say you became a two-time world champion, that's another. So I'm more focused on just the belt. Like, I'm just like really, like I'm telling you guys now, just like from you even mentioning that right now, I just had like this chill and it said like this hunger in me because I really want, like I want the title. I mean, because let's be honest, my good friend that you guys reached out to, Jerry, you know, he always told me the money's in the fights anyway. The money's in the fights. Let's be honest. The money is in the fights, but like, go get the belt. The money's gonna come. So that's why I don't focus so much on payday. If you handle business in boxing and do it the right way, let's say we beat Joe and then we go want to do unification, the money's in the fight. So I'm focused on more of winning the belt rather than looking at what the belt can do for me. But I just want the title.
Well, on that note, Jamel, We appreciate your time today. I think it's your third time here on the last round. Your schedule will come back. It definitely won't be the last. You're scheduled to come back as of at least this moment, sometime in September, hopefully, at least, maybe sometime in October, but at least one of those months. That's the plan right now. But, you know, there's no opponent yet, right? Nobody listed?
Nobody listened. I'm just waiting. But right now, I'm just shaking out. I was in the gym today. So I'm just shaking out to stay loose. So when the opponent in the camp or the date officially comes my way, I can jump straight into it.
Awesome. Well, before we completely sign off here, Jamel, go ahead and let them know where they can find you and keep up with your stuff and keep up with your news.
Well, yeah, as you can see, just keep them on Twitter because Twitter gets everything for these days anyway. So like I said, my man Joe replied to me earlier tonight. My video was I seen him yesterday because we follow each other on Instagram also. So I seen him post a video. I seen him post a video of him hitting the bag. I said, you know what? I'm gonna get a video and I'm gonna reply to that. I'm gonna my own way. So basically, I put that on Instagram, Twitter, so you guys can follow me there who are watching at Jamel Herring. But yeah, a lot of the news is gonna come on social media, of course, Twitter mainly. But yeah, easy to find. You know, whenever you guys need me, please feel free to reach out to me anytime.
We definitely appreciate that, Jamel. We definitely appreciate that. Good luck in September. We'll be watching and cheering you on. Mike, as we sign off towards the finish line here, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week.
So for our guest of the week and former WBO Super Featherweight Champion of the World, who returns to the ring hopefully in September and October of this year, coming out of retirement from May of 2022, from my Jamel Herring, from my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.